Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Juneteenth, June 19th, 1865, the day when enslaved people in Texas first learned they had been freed. In the past century and a half, that date has become synonymous with the celebration of black culture, and this week becoming a federal holiday. In a conversation about race and hope, ABC's Michael Strahan caught up with former President Barack Obama.
President Obama, happy Juneteenth.
It is good to see you. Happy Juneteenth to you.
Thank you. I remember being in school, and they had all the presidents, and they had every president up there, and you would look at that list, and you would say, I want to be president, but I don't think you could believe it. Now, when they look at that, your face is up there. And a lot of people will look and say, it signifies, since you've been elected president, that we've moved on from the issue of race. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that's never been the case, that by virtue of my election, somehow we entered into a post-racial world. It wasn't something I believed at the time, and I certainly don't believe it now. The fact is that a lot of barriers still exist for a whole lot of folks.
Yeah.
When you look at that list of presidents, we still haven't seen a woman. And the notion that women somehow are not qualified to, you know, the fact is, at least in my household, the women are smarter, more insightful, more caring, better looking, more talented, funnier.
We live in the same household.
That's my point. So something's happening in our society that prevents them from ascending to the highest office in the land. The same is true for African Americans. The same is true for Latinos and the first Americans, Native Americans. The odds are stacked in ways that prevent a lot of young people from realizing their potential. And we can do something about it.
You ran on hope.
We are choosing hope over fear and sending a powerful message that change is coming to America.
We're now in 2021, and we have the pandemic, the insurrection, racial reckoning. A lot of people feel like they've lost hope. Mm-hmm. How can people get that hope back?
You get hope back from, for me at least, taking the long view and recognizing that resilience, determination, the ability to deal with setbacks and disappointments and keep going. That those are qualities that can carry us forward. And no one has exhibited that more historically in this country than African Americans.
In your book, you spoke about deep divisions in this country. One of the deepest divisions is the police and the use of force. What do you see as our next steps on the path forward with that?
Well, first of all, I could not be prouder of the young activists who responded to the George Floyd murder and so many of the other incidents that we've seen over the last several years.
No justice! No peace!
You had a level of white participation in those protests that you never saw, even at the height of the civil rights movement back in the 60s. The key now is to translate that righteous, you know, anger and frustration and sadness into concrete policies.
The Capitol and the mob, which we both saw storm the Capitol. It just showed a level of distrust.
Yes.
Between people in the government. Is there a way back from that?
I think there's a way back from it. We've got to do a better job of reducing the influence of those who try to inflame division and traffic and conspiracy theories for their own benefit.
Is it a threat to democracy? You see it as a threat?
Absolutely
to democracy.
It is. If we can't agree on basic facts, then it's very hard for us to negotiate and compromise in a way that is constructive.
There are so many people out there who idea the American dream, they can't visualize, they can't see it anymore. So What is it going to take for people to be able to realize and envision the American dream again?
Well, look, historically, the American dream has been a reality for some and a myth for others. We're in a community, Anacostia, in Washington, D.C., that's representative of a lot of communities around the country, where the kids who grow up here may formally be free, but structurally, because of poverty, because of schools that aren't working, because of substandard housing, it requires so much more effort for them to live out that American dream.
During D.C.'s hot and humid summer nights, the Goodman League draws hoop stars and spectators to the district's southeast corner of Anacostia in Berry Farms. I wanted to meet some of the area's promising students and athletes.
You know what? Let's go hang out in the gym. Well, I got a friend of mine I want y'all to meet. This guy here, I think he thinks he can play some ball. Come check him out.
What's going on, people?
Come on over here.
So these are the stars.
President Obama. These are some of the kids from the Goodman League and a few other schools here. Very talented athletes.
They look like they got game. How's it going, everybody?
Good.
But you're a basketball player.
Oh, I got a little game.
But here's your quote. A passionate basketball player of limited talent.
Well, look, you don't see me in the NBA. I had to do something else. What are you guys' plans in terms of what you want to be doing next year?
I'm actually signed to Wagner College, so I'll be going up there July 5th, actually next month.
Congratulations.
To play basketball, thank you, and study nursing.
How about you?
I don't know where I want to go yet. I do know I want to study law.
I'm a lawyer, I know a little bit about that.
The president here, who said you were a lackadaisical student and an incessant, dedicated partier. But now he stands before you, president.
Look, I was like a lot of teenagers. I made mistakes. But the reason I tell young people that is because I want them to have a sense that even if you make some mistakes, you still have so much time to reorient yourself and to go down a path that can lead to success. All of us have had the experience on whether it's a football team or a basketball team, and you start feeling like it's all part of something bigger than just you. And the same that's true in sports is true in life.
We've been talking about everything that's been going on, what happened to George Floyd and all the protests. And I'm just curious, did any of you participate in any protests?
Yes, I was down there one day.
And why was that important for you?
It got tired of just seeing it, just to come together as a community. It was a good thing.
But they didn't come out here holding basketballs, just a whole basketball. I think you got to show us a little something.
Well, let's see what you got. Everybody smiling? All right, one more time.
Okay, great.
What keeps you up at night and what gives you the most joy?
What keeps me up at night, how does our democracy get refreshed and updated so that it continues to work effectively as we become a more diverse society? How can we ensure that if you work hard in this country, you can make it? What gives me joy is my daughters. Because when I see the two of them and the grace and kindness and sense of responsibility they have to each other and to the wider world, of all the things I have accomplished in my life, my partnership with Michelle resulting in them, that makes everything worth it.
Our thanks to Michael. A Promised Land, Volume 1 of Barack Obama's presidential memoir is in bookstores now. When we come back, a celebration of soul food.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
The roots of soul food are far and wide and trace back hundreds of years to slave times. The smells and taste of home cooking remind many people of family and a connection with their ancestors. Here's ABC's Deborah Roberts.
I'm sure your potato salad will go with my chicken.
This is great. Oh, I can't wait.
When I think of soul food, three things come to mind. Good friends, good conversation, and of course, good food.
This is fun. Can't wait for our guests to get here.
I know. They'll be here in a minute.
So I invited a few folks over for a Juneteenth dinner, co-hosted with my friend, renowned chef and opera singer, Alexander Smalls.
Wade in the water. Wade in the water, children. Wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water.
Oh, my gosh. You're taking me back home in Georgia for me. When you're in the kitchen, Alexander, what do you feel?
This is home. This is comfort. This is joy. It's also a conversation with the ancestors. Oh, my. Lovely. When I was a kid, I understood that the person who cooked the food had the power. Ruled the roost.
That's true. What you got in? Oh, macaroni and cheese. That was a Sunday staple at my house. Okay, I'm glad I wore a loose dress today, because I'm going to need it. I'm so excited. Thanks for coming over and cooking.
Hello.
Oh, Lorraine. Hi.
Our guests, actress and foodie Lorraine Toussaint, food journalist Kayla Stewart, and chef Pierre Serrault. We had to do it upright with this incredible spread. Black-eyed peas, collard greens, chef's famous Carolina cabbage and corn slaw, and of course, Southern fried chicken.
So what does this table mean for you?
Thanksgiving. People of color owned nothing. There were times we didn't own ourselves, but we owned that recipe. And to be able to create something that had a sense of bountifulness is what a table like this really means.
Gracious Lord, make us truly humble and thankful for the food which we're about to receive, and help us to always remember those who do not have. Amen.
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 This food makes me want to dance.
I know, right? Oh,
it's gorgeous. Beautiful. It's vibrant.
The star of this meal, Alexander's oxtails and okra.
I'm getting down on these oxtails. They are amazing.
That's not pretty eating. That's good eating.
The braised tailbone of cow that has been slow cooked for hours, a dish that has very humble beginnings.
So much of this was what was left over from when we were slaves, because the tails were the parts of the animal they threw away.
What was once scraps from a slave master's table, now a delicacy adopted by other cultures.
Mm. Do you think the African influence on food has been shared or appropriated?
You can track our influence through the transatlantic slave trade. Shared. I would hesitate to say that anything that we ever had was shared.
Growing up in the South, there's this concept of soul food, and then there's Southern food. And I think Southern food has been given the image of white food, when really Southern food comes from African. Black chefs in the South have rarely been given the attention.
In fact, up until the 50s, cooks were typically domestic workers, and most of them black. Then James Beard made white male chefs fashionable.
He made it glamorous. 30 years ago, I stood in this space almost by myself in order to move forward, I had to own. Not just the seat at the table, but the whole damn table.
People definitely assume that as a black chef that soul food is what you do. At Ghetto Gastro, what we aim to do is remove those stigmas that European food is the luxury, right?
You know, for years, African-American chefs have been told their food wasn't worthy. So nothing gives me more pleasure than to see the young chefs now who really are putting it on the line, telling their stories through food.
Among them, singer Khalees.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and their life is better than yours.
She's part of a new generation of young black chefs connecting back to their roots and finding a new path forged by farming.
Soul food really came from the garden. It came from the farm. It wasn't canned, it wasn't frozen. It wasn't unhealthy. Think about mac and cheese, or you think about a candied yam. Everybody wasn't eating like that every day. Those are the treats. I think our conception of soul food has become warped because of the narrative that's been fed to us. Food really is the universal language. It brings people together. It's like it is the most communal thing you can do.
Another one of those chefs changing the game, Mashama Bailey, rewriting history at her Savannah restaurant, The Gray.
You are a black female chef in an industry that is pretty much dominated by white male chefs. What has that been like for you?
I don't think that black chefs have gotten the proper credit. I think that we've been on the railroad cars and we've been in homes cooking food like this for generations. And I think now I have an opportunity to create my own dialogue. So I will call that soul food.
How would you describe this restaurant?
I describe the restaurant as beautiful. I think it's a relic. It once was a segregated bus station, and that was the draw for me.
The main dining area, once a whites-only waiting room, now a bar.
When people come here to The Gray, is this a soul food restaurant?
No. I think it's labeled as a Southern restaurant. I want to push the envelope a little bit, and I want to create a little bit of a melting pot when it comes to Southern food, American food, black food, Northern food.
Comfort food is so much more than what's on our plate.
Food has been the thing that has soothed our souls. I was able to comfort my family.
Chef Alexander, you said that your cooking cred came by your potato salad sometimes.
Black folk took particular pride in their recipes.
And we get very competitive sometimes
very
with things, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody has their staple dishes.
Yes.
There's
yes.
no question.
Yes.
Exactly.
And you walked in with pride as
yes.
you carried it, too.
Yes, right. yes.
But again, that was our power. That was our currency. It was a way of feeling dignity and respect.
Yes, thank you, sir.
As our feast came to a close,
I just want to say cheers.
These
cheers.
Souls were feeling grateful, happy, and very full.
To our ancestors.
To our ancestors.
I love that.
Our thanks to Deborah. We'll be right back with the final thought. And finally tonight, it was Frederick Douglass, a black man born into slavery, who literally ran his way to freedom, becoming one of America's greatest abolitionists and statesmen, who asked this question, what to the slave is the 4th of July? For too long, America's independence did not include people who look like me. Now tonight, for the first time, all Americans can celebrate those twin sisters of freedom, the 4th of July and June 19th. What could possibly be more American than that? That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time, next week. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.